Proverbs on the tongue. If you were here when I preached through Proverbs, you've heard this before. But some things are worth repeating. I thought this one was worth repeating. Does this work? It does work. Good. All right, an interesting statistic. I don't know who figured this out. But on an average day, people, any individual will speak between 18,000 to 30,000 words, with women having a much higher average than men. Proverbs 10:19 states, "Where there are many words, transgression is unavoidable. But he who restrains his lips is wise." And so wonder our mouths gets us in trouble. And it often does. Every culture has recognized this and expressed it in different ways. Here's an interesting little poem that expressed this. "The boneless tongue, so small and weak, can crush and kill, declares the Greek. The tongue destroys a greater horde, the Turk asserts, than does the sword. The Persian proverb wisely saith, a lengthy tongue, an early death." I guess that'd be wisely Seth. A lengthy tongue, an early death. "Or sometimes takes the form instead, don't let your tongue cut off your head. The tongue can speak a word whose speed, say the Chinese, outstrips the steed. The Arab sages said in part, the tongue's great storehouse is the heart. From Hebrew was the maxim sprung, thy feet should slip, ne'er let the tongue. The sacred rider crowns the whole, who keeps his tongue doth keep his soul." So that comes from James 3:1-12. And this passage succinctly describes the power and the contrasting uses of the tongue. "Let not many of you become teachers, my brethren, knowing that as such we will incur a stricter judgment. For we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to bridle the whole body as well. Now if we put the bits into the horses' mouths so that they will obey us, we direct their entire body as well. Look at the ships also. Though they are so great and are driven by strong winds, are still directed by a very small rudder wherever the inclination of the pilot desires. So also the tongue is a small part of the body, and yet it boasts of great things. See how great a force is set aflame by such a small fire? And the tongue is a fire, the very world of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members as that which defiles the entire body, and sets on fire the course of our life, and is set on fire by hell. For every species of beasts and birds, of reptiles and creatures of the sea, is tamed and has been tamed by human race. But no one can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil and full of deadly poison. With it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come both blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be this way. Does a fountain send out from the same opening both fresh and bitter water? Can a fig tree, my brethren, produce olives, or a vine produce figs? Nor can salt water produce fresh." And so while the tongue is the specific object that James is speaking about this, it's easy to see the reference is more than just the tongue. It's what the tongue does. It's this whole issue of communication. A bit controls the horse, the rudder that steers the ship, the ember starts a forest fire. What the tongue does communicate is ideas, thoughts, emotions through speech. And as we look at this, keep clearly in mind the larger issue here is communication, not just verbal speech, verbal communication, but all forms of communication. What are we actually expressing to other people? Now, Paul makes very relevant comment in 1 Corinthians 14, verses 7 through 11. He's discussing the necessity of clear speech. He says yet even lifeless things, either flute or harp, in producing a sound, if they do not produce a distinction of tones, how will it be known what is played on the flute or on the harp? For if the bugle produces an indistinct sound, who will prepare himself for battle? So also you, unless you utter by the tongue speech that is clear, how will be known what is spoken? For you will be speaking to the air. For there are, perhaps, a great many kinds of languages in the world, and no kind is without meaning. If then I do not know the meaning of the language, I will be the one who speaks a barbarian, and the one who speaks will be a barbarian to me. So that is kind of a recap of communication theory that we talked about a little earlier. If your message is not clearly communicated, nothing's happened. You've not actually communicated. There's been no exchange of ideas because there's just been confusion on the other end. And so in order for me to share an idea, a thought, an emotion with you, then again, I have to take those steps that were back in the communication theory. I have to encode it, I have to transmit it, it has to be received, it has to be decoded, and then hopefully will be understood. Miscommunication occurs at every step along the way, or can. Lack of clarity, noise, interference, all come with misunderstandings. So we've already talked about that. Now, the tongue is powerful. James already described its ability to be like a spark that gets a forest fire raging. He says it's untamable and that it's inconsistent because it expresses both blessings and curses. Now, again, the issue isn't really so much the tongue, it's what's making it work. What's it doing? It's expressing what's in us. Whatever communication, that's what's actually being expressed. The tongue just is giving, allowing that to be communicated out to other people, as other things can do the same thing. So really the problem's more internal. But we can at least control the flow outward. People can know that you have an evil heart, but you don't have to blast them with it and expose them to it. Okay? You can contain it. And that's what a lot of Proverbs do. Because we should be containing it. We all know when we get into our prayer closet how rotten we are. Okay? But I can at least put that rottenness in a nice container so that when I'm out of my prayer closet, it's not spilling out on everybody else. God can handle that. Other people cannot. Hopefully that's a good analogy of what I'm talking about. So it's not trying to be fake. It's trying to be real, but real with an understanding of myself and the responsibilities God has given to me to be someone who is a blessing, not a curse. I may be thinking one thing, but doesn't mean I should act on what I am thinking. I should repent of what I'm thinking and act on what God has told me to do. So even if I think the fellow I'm talking to is an idiot for doing whatever he's doing, that's not how you should express it. Because I'm told to be an encouragement to this fellow. Instead of writing them off because I'm proud and I think they should be at least up to my level, it's no. Be humble to say is, how can I help you, my brother? That's going to be the idea between the tongue. So I'm stifling myself, the evil within me, and letting God change that by my actions to do what he has said. That's how you're going to use your tongue. Okay? That's not hypocrisy. That's being obedient to God. And let God continue to change your heart. Because what ends up happening, just like with small children, how do we train them? We train them by their actions first. As they get older, we start working on the attitude issues. And the same thing is true for us. We work on our actions first, let us at least do what is right, even if my heart's not in it, and let the heart change. Okay? There's a lot of people we can learn to love, and it's difficult. But we learn to love by doing the loving thing and taking those actions of love, and eventually the emotions catch up with it. Just like, I actually do have fond feelings of affection for this person, and I care about them. Even though they're still the same person they were before. God changes our heart. So keep that in mind as we're going through a lot of these Proverbs. We speak the truth in love. They both go together. Speaking the truth and just letting all that come out of whatever you think is not in love. And therefore it should be stifled. Let's make sure we're keeping both aspects of it. So let's consider some of these things about the tongue and its dangers. It is very powerful. Proverbs has a lot on the tongue and communication. It can build up or destroy. Proverbs 11:9. With his mouth, the godless man destroys his neighbor, but through knowledge, the righteous will be delivered. And what's true for individuals is true for communities, Proverbs 11:11. By the blessing of the upright, a city is exalted. By the mouth of the wicked, it is torn down. Proverbs 10:14 adds this, wise men store up knowledge, but with the mouth of the foolish, ruin is at hand. So it can go either direction. What are we going to do with it? The ruin caused by a foolish mouth could be of others or of self. Proverbs 18:7 warns, a fool's mouth is his ruin, and his lips are the snare of his soul. How does a fool's speech cause that kind of harm? Proverbs 12:16. Characteristics of fools is anger. And anger is known as want, and because they don't have self-control to conceal the matter, it spills out everywhere around them. And since they're easily provoked, foolish people lash out, and then they provoke others. And we've all seen that kind of thing escalate. We don't want to join them in their foolishness. Proverbs 25:23, the north wind brings forth rain and backbiting tongue and angry countenance. It certainly does. And I think we've all been the victims of that. Now, when these two aspects get together, now you have a real problem. Proverbs 30:33, for the churning of milk produces butter, the pressing the nose brings forth blood, so the churning of anger produces strife. So they're already anger, now we're just going to ramp it up, and now we have a war. And that strife then leads to violence. Proverbs 18:6, a fool's lips bring strife, his mouth calls for blows. Speaking too much is another source of ruin. Proverbs 13:3, the one who guards his mouth preserves his life, the one who opens wide his lips comes to ruin. Proverbs 10:19, when there are many words, transgression is unavoidable, but he who restrains his lips is wise. And so it really comes to this, a wise man knows when to stay silent. You learn. Don't go there. It's time to be restrained. Proverbs 17:27-28, he who restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. Even a fool, when he keeps silent, is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he is considered prudent. How often have we gotten ourselves in trouble because we didn't do that? Someone said something, so you say something back. They say something, you say something back. And now we're escalating. At what point does someone have enough wisdom to say, I'm not going any farther? Okay, we need to cool down. Yeah,
I'm just, Nancy. If this keeps coming to my mind, the World War II, loose lips,
sink ships.
And I think of that a lot with what you're saying now. You know, if you go overboard with your speech, you're going to spew out things that, you know, you really have to keep a bay. You have to really think about what you're saying before you say it.
You really do.
Because you can never take it back.
And that's the hard part. You can be forgiven, but it's still there.
Yeah.
It's still in the mind.
The damage is
And you've destroyed trust with that.
Yeah.
People need to know they can trust you. Yeah. The tongue has the power to calm or intensify. Proverbs 15:1. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. So the wise man is careful in what and how he says. The fool is not. That's the big difference between them. So we want to be wise. An apt word is what we want to give, not just spewing out whatever has come up with us, especially the emotions. Now, most of us learned growing up the adage, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. It's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It was meant to encourage us to ignore things, walk away from them when people are speaking as fools. That was the idea. You don't have to escalate this. But the adage is wrong. Proverbs 25:15, by forbearance a ruler may be persuaded, and a soft tongue breaks the bone. You can use words and you can destroy people with it. They do go down deep. Proverbs 18:21, death and life are in the power of the tongue. How? Because words can stir people up. And that can even lead to murder. The Sanhedrin did this in the stoning of Stephen. They didn't do it themselves. They stirred the people up until they did it. Words can also prevent murder. Gamaliel did that in Acts 5. They were set to kill the apostles, and he brought wisdom, calmed them down, and said they're only beaten, which is better than being killed, but it was words that did that. What is communicated in court or to authorities will affect the judgments pronounced, and so there's a lot of warnings in Proverbs about that. Proverbs 16:10, A divine decision is in the lips of the king. His mouth should not err in judgment. And because the truth of a witness is imperative for justice to be done, Proverbs 14:25, a truthful witness saves lives, but he who utters lies is treacherous. Or 16:13, righteous lips are delight to the king, but he who speaks right is loved. So it's important. Too bad when we had the Kavanaugh hearings, these things weren't being put forth. After seeking truth, it was a travesty every way possible, including what they did to Ms. Ford. They shouldn't have done that to her. That was wrong. But that's another story. If they applied Proverbs to these things, it wouldn't have happened. It was all about political gain. What is communicated is also powerful to bring healing. Proverbs 12:18. There is one who speaks rashly like the thrust of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. So which is it going to be? 16:24 adds this, pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. So there is a lot of power. We can go either direction. And the wise then know how to use the tongue to encourage and be a blessing, and fools just go the other direction. What's communicated can deliver from harm. Proverbs 12:6 points out, the words of the wicked lie in wait for blood, but the mouth of the upright will deliver them. And a good example of that is Acts 23. It was Paul's nephew who delivered him by repeating what he had heard. It did deliver him. Moved the Roman commander to move Paul out of the danger that he was in. Proverbs 18:20, important to me since I make my living through communication, with the fruit of a man's mouth, his stomach will be satisfied. He'll be satisfied with the product of his lips. I guess I'm doing okay. I've been well satisfied. All right, proper use of the tongue. Oh, I'm sorry, this was behind, wasn't it? I wasn't paying attention. Okay, proper use of the tongue. Well, first of all, it should be for praising God. Romans 14:11 talks about that. Paul quotes Isaiah 45, the day is coming when every knee shall bow and every tongue will confess what? That Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of the Father. That confession, the tongue is going to be used with this. It should be in praise to God. Several Proverbs deal with this. Proverbs 10:31, the mouth of the righteous flows with wisdom, the perverted tongue will be cut out. And so here again is this contrast between righteous character and wisdom and that of the foolish, the wicked. Proverbs 15:2, the tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable, but the mouth of fools spouts folly. So the wise not only speak with wisdom, but they also make that knowledge acceptable to the naive, while the one who lacks understanding but is still proud declares things that are deficient in the staying of the truth. They don't care about the truth. Part of wisdom is speaking with appropriate timing. We've all recognized that. Proverbs 15:23, a man has joy in an apt answer, and how delightful is a timely word. Related to that, Proverbs 25:11, like apples of gold in settings of silver is a word spoken in right circumstances. So timing has a whole lot to do with our communication. Saying it at the right time. Another part of wisdom is answering only after hearing to gain the truth, so that you thoughtfully consider what is being said. Here's something underlying a lot of our problems with speech. We've not listened first. Proverbs 15:28, the heart of the righteous ponders how to answer. 16:23, the heart of the wise instructs his mouth and adds persuasiveness to his lips. And that's contrast with the foolish. The mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. With the consequence, their rashness gets them in trouble. He who answers before he hears, it is folly and shame to him. And yet, how often have we all done that? We've not heard them, or while they're speaking, I'm so busy thinking about what I'm going to answer back, I never really heard what they said. Mm-hmm. And so out I come with whatever my comments are, and they weren't appropriate. Clearly understand what the other person is talking about before you answer. Slow down the communication if necessary. Ask questions. Then say something. Wait, if our politicians did that,
Yeah.
Oh, wow. You know, the TV stations would go broke because they'd have nothing to advertise, would they? It's just a terrible season of the year. The commercials is, how can you be so blatant in your lies? Because I want to win. That's it. And tragedy is they work because people believe it. And they don't think, and then they repeat it. Well, there's a difference. Proverbs 31 woman is the godly woman, and a lot has to do with her use of her tongue. She opens her mouth in wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. What a difference. And so her life fits well the personification of wisdom described in Proverbs 8, 6 and 8. Wisdom calls out and says, "Listen, for I will speak noble things. The opening of my lips will reveal right things. For my mouth will utter truth, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the utterances of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing crooked or perverted in them." That's why we want wisdom. And we want to listen to wisdom and use wisdom and reflect her. It's also proper to speak the truth and to judge righteously. He who speaks the truth tells what is right, Proverbs 12:17. Ephesians 4:15 adds that the manner of our speaking the truth is to be in love. Proverbs 31:9, open your mouth, judge righteously, defend the rights of the afflicted and needy. Truth and justice then are contrary to this natural bent man has for personal gain or self-protection. God promises a blessing for righteousness. Truthful lips will be established forever, Proverbs 12:19. Proper speech is wholesome, seeking to build others up. Proverbs 10:31-32. The mouth of the righteous flows with wisdom, the lips of the righteous bring forth what is acceptable. Ephesians 4:29 summarizes, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification, according to the need of the moment, that it might give grace to those who hear. Proper communication also brings other blessings, including protection, good life, good and life, and therefore valuable. Proverbs 14:3. In the mouth of the foolish is a rod for his back, but the lips of the wise will protect them. From the fruit of a man's mouth he enjoys good, Proverbs 13:2. A soothing tongue is a tree of life, Proverbs 15:4. And because of all those things, Proverbs 10:20, the tongue of the righteous is his choice silver. So proper use of the tongue is a blessing. But of course the tongue brings trouble as well. Communication that reflects righteousness is blessing, but when it's communicated sinfully, or it's done sinfully, then there's great trouble. And, of course, the prophet gives a lot of warnings about that, all the damage that's done. And what each type of trouble has is this bent towards sin. If the heart is unrighteous, even the attempt to use what should be good, a proverb, becomes either a useless or even harmful. So we've all seen that too. Someone who doesn't understand, and they're so wicked, even a good proverb, they still twist and pervert it. Proverbs 26:7-9 says this, like the legs which are useless to the lame, so a proverb in the mouth of fools, and like a thorn which falls into the hand of a drunkard, so is a proverb in the mouth of fools. That's bad, because they can't apply it. They don't understand it. So they twist it, they pervert it. Gossip, that's the first type of unrighteous speech that I want to address. The English word gossip refers to spreading of rumor about the private matters of others behind their backs. And there are several aspects to gossip. Proverbs 18:8-26-20-22 uses the word whisperer. And it refers to speaking softly to describe the manner of gossip because it is behind someone's back. It's secretive. That's why you're whispering. I don't want other people to know what I'm saying, so I'm whispering it. For the lack of wood, the fire goes out, and where there is no whisperer, contention quiets down. Like charcoal to hot embers and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. The words of a whisperer are like dainty morsels. They go down into the innermost parts of the body. The destruction caused by the whisper is seen in Proverbs 16:28. Same word translated there as slanderer. Whisper, slander, same word. Perverse man spreads strife, a slanderer, the whisperer, separates intimate friends. And we've probably all been victims of that too. Somebody else is talking to your friends and slandering you. the next thing you know, you're losing your friends. Like, what's this all about? Well, it's evil. Probably should know that it may not be the intention of the whisper to cause such damage, but the danger of doing such damage is there nevertheless. You're sharing things that they don't really usually know about. It's hearsay. And even if it's not, why should they be telling somebody else? If they really have a problem, if they have an issue, why not go to the person they have the issue with? But it's fun to do that. People talk about people. Mm-hmm. So they whisper, they slander, they gossip.
Yeah. Behind their backs, does that mean just because they're not in earshot of it, or is it something because that's something that shouldn't be repeated? Well, put it here. I'll give an example. Suppose someone shares something with me. I should put it on Facebook. They're seeing it. Technically, it's not behind their backs. Would that be considered gossip? Or I promote it out.
Gossip. They may be public in their publishing of it, but they still haven't gone to the person. Why have they not gone to the person?
Right.
Why not check out the facts of the person? And that's what's behind it. Whispering is used because it's the idea that I don't want other people to hear, because especially don't want the person I'm talking about to hear about it. That's why we say behind the back in English and define it that way. I don't want that person to know about it because I'm not going to talk to them about it. Because if it's gossip, it's just whatever this information is, I'm spreading it to other people without dealing with the person themselves. Now, Facebook, I'll use myself as an example. All right, I post on Facebook, it's for the world to see. I hardly ever look at Facebook. You know how I hear about it? Someone else tells me about it. They didn't come to me.
Right.
They didn't express anything to me. But they've put this out there for everyone else to know. Now how do you get it back? There's a good analogy to this. A guy had been whispering and slandering, came and apologized. So just to show him how damaging this is, he said, I want you to get a pillow. So he gets this pillow, went out in the street, and he tore it, blew it out to the wind. So the feathers went everywhere. He said, that's what your gospel is. It's blown everywhere. Now that you've done this, I want you to go pick up every feather. Mm-hmm. Hence, Facebook. I've blown it to the wind, and now what?
Yeah, so that I just want to make sure a person can't say, no, I didn't gossip about you because I did it in front of your face. Because that's what...
No, that's not in front of your face. In front of your face is going to you.
Well, no, it's on the open. It's not behind your back because you're on my Facebook.
It's not. It's still...
You know.
So what if they went out at a party and you're there and they shared something? Is that gossip?
Okay. I'm over there, and you're telling
me... No, you're right next to me, and I'm sharing with somebody else a secret that we had. Would that be considered...
That's not a trusted friend, and you're... Because the difference here is going to be this.
That's just evil.
I just want to know if it's gossip. So it is gossip.
That's evil. That's not gossip.
Would it be?
It's not whispering. Yeah. That gives you the opportunity, because it's in front of people.
Yeah.
It's for you to rebuke them right there. It's like, that's not true.
What if it was
true? Or as you're saying, is why you can rebuke him right then. Like, why are you telling other people this?
Okay.
I told you that in confidence. What kind of friends
exactly
are you? Hence, you're rebuking them in front of the people.
But that would not be gossip.
It's not going to go anywhere else because it's just been shut down because of the rebuke. This whole idea of gossip, whispering, is that I don't want to be corrected on this. I'm not willing to get corrected. I want to get this information out. That's the whole idea behind it. Okay? There's an old kind of an ad as it goes like this. If you're not willing to say it to them, then don't say it. And if you are willing to say it to them, then go tell them first. Or ask them about it. Verify it. Then you have to start looking at the motives. Why do you want to tell other people?
Well, that's what I'm thinking.
Okay?
Is what is our motivating factor for wanting to gossip and spread? What is our motivation? Is it to make build us up, to make us feel better because the other person is more inferior if you spread these rumors?
Probably, but they may not admit that.
Well, let me go to the next word, because there's another one. Proverbs 11:13 and 20:19 both use a different word. It's rakhil. It describes the spread of gossip. The root word means to go about as in trading. In this case, it's personal information rumor that's being traded, translated as tale bearer. Proverbs 11:13. He who goes about as a tale-bearer reveals secrets, but he who is trustworthy conceals a matter. And a slanderer in Proverbs 20:19. So hence sometimes the Hebrew is translated by the same English word that of a different Hebrew word. Proverbs 20:19. He who goes about as a slanderer, you put the tale-bearer there, reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with a gossip. Now you have the two being brought together. Don't associate with this person. That's why if the person said it, right, you're right there, you rebuked him immediately, you just identified this person is a talebearer, a gossip, stay away from him. This is not someone you want to have as your friend. Okay? Gossip in this verse is, again, is from a different root that means to entice, to deceive. The nature of gossip can change rapidly when it goes beyond just indiscretion, then it starts becoming malicious. And then it escalates to actual slander, which is a different word, diva. It's defaming, evil report. It's used in Proverbs 10:18, which says a person is a fool who does that. And tragically, there's a lot of these kinds of fools around that are happy to defame others if they think it will get them ahead. That's what we're talking about. So they're not just gossips. Now they are malicious gossips, which are purposely slandering. So there's levels of this. It's interesting that it escalates. I wasn't clicking the button. I'm sorry. All right, did you get those for your blanks if you needed them? So again, generally, if you're not going to say the person directly, you shouldn't say it. Refrain from it. Talk to them first. Check out your facts with them. So, if you seek advice to deal with a problem someone, then go work it out. So we're not saying that you don't get counsel, but I'm having a problem. And you get advice of how to deal with the problem. But once you get advice, go deal with it, and the person who gave the counsel should hold you accountable. Did you deal with the problem? Did you get it corrected? And that's how you end the gossip. Someone comes to you and says something, then your immediate counter is like, have you talked to this person about it? And if they haven't, then you hold them accountable. Then you need to go talk to them. You don't need telling me if you haven't told them. Or if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. So that becomes part of it. So again, it doesn't mean you don't get advice about dealing with someone, but hold them accountable to work that out. And if you're, again, the one hearing about a problem, be part of the solution, hold them accountable, go talk about it, and get it worked out. If not, you become part of the problem. So, let's go back here. Okay, just to make sure we clear up this whole thing about gossip. Both sides come into this. One are people who want to defend that whatever they're doing is not gossip because they're going to find, I put it on Facebook, therefore it's not gossip. I'm sorry, it is gossip. You still haven't talked to the person who did it. All right? And to someone like me, here's a Facebook account. I'll never look at it. Rarely look at it, to be more precise. I very rarely look at it. And there's a lot of people, they don't have Facebook accounts. So you put it out in public, you still haven't dealt with the issue of whatever you're doing. Now, it could be something innocent that has nothing to do with anything, although it could be a little embarrassing to someone. Hey, did you hear about so-and-so who did whatever? Or this happened to them. But then it starts escalating. And it's not just this common, I don't have anything important to talk about, so I'll just talk about people. Okay? I'm just, whatever people are doing. Gossip magazines, all that kind of stuff, the rags, the Hollywood rags are worse. Okay? Make up a story. But now it can get malicious because it's being said on purpose because it is putting them down. And the idea then is, if I'm putting them down, I'm escalating myself because I'm above them. See, I'm better than them. This is what they did. All right? It was a couple months ago, I had to warn the congregation about Sarah. Because she's been doing this. She's been posting on Facebook. May think she's not gossip. I'm sorry, what she's saying is all slander. It's not true. It's unbiblical. And she wants to make out like she's a very biblical person. All right? I have rebuked her on it. I've sent her emails on it. Not much I can do, but the consequences have been tremendous on how many people she's affected by whispering. What she isn't a gossip. It's a malicious gossip. There is a purpose. There is a motive. She is striving to destroy. For whatever reason, there's that expression of evil. That has a lot to do with malicious gossip. Now, it's interesting, the qualifications for deaconess, it does not say is not a gossip. It says not a malicious gossip. Why? Because there's intent there, and because this whole thing of you're talking about people, it's too much a part of life. If you held people that they're never going to gossip, no one will ever be qualified. Period. Okay? Because they're going to say you did something. You didn't come talk to me first. I'm like, well, I didn't think it was a big deal. Well, it's a big deal to me. I didn't want people to know. How bad can... I had a guy, prayer meetings many years ago, people would share their requests, and we'd write them down, and then on Sundays, I'd have a printout of all these requests. And this one fellow shared about his mother-in-law who had cancer. So we put it in there, just pray for this lady. And then I got a call the next week by the husband of this woman who was ringing me out. It's like, how dare you put that in your prayer request, letting people know that my wife has cancer? I wasn't sure how to answer that one. Okay, then we won't pray for her.
Pray for you.
I wasn't sure what you want there. But you can see, you can go from that extreme to the other one. It's just like, and then anything you say must be. No.
But considering the emotion he was going through, you know, I mean, you're talking just, about receiving.
Him, it was, she has cancer, that's a private affair. People should know our medical business.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so much the opposite. I don't care if you know my medical business. In fact, it's probably good. Maybe you have a solution for me. Maybe I definitely
want to get a doctor to go to or whatever.
Yeah, or avoid this doctor, go to this doctor. This one's a better doctor. I'm an open book when it comes to medical, right?
But we are all different, and I mean, that's so, the way he was dealing with it. I'm just seeing
now,
that.
I'm seeing that. Yeah. But I just so the extremes could be very different. So what should we do? It's kindness. I apologize. Well, I'm sorry. I certainly had no idea that you'd be offended that we would publish to pray for your wife, but I said, I will take it out. It won't be in there next week. I said, but we'll still pray for her. So you see the difference?
Yeah.
So, all right. But we want to be careful of this whole area. Don't be caught into it. And it's so easy to get caught into it. And then around. Go talk to the person. If there's a problem, go talk to them. Don't just be spreading information because it sounds interesting. Did you hear so-and-so? It's not relevant.
I think, too, Pastor, this, what you're saying is that we, I find with us, too, is that relaying the information, if we're thinking of a different way, that kind of, like to say, that relates to the person so that it doesn't have a presentation of, like, evil or but like ill intent and stuff like that. And then what I find with the gossip too is that it's one of those things where my own self is like, I may not necessarily do it, but it's one of those things where even I hear other people do it and just stay around to hear it. And that's a different type of sin in itself. And that's my biggest, being totally open with you guys, that's my biggest thing at work. I'll use that environment. Such and such talking about this, and okay, I'm not saying anything, but I'm right there. And if the person comes to me, oh, I'm agreeing with them, or not saying anything. They're saying, oh, they're this, that, or that. You know, it takes even more of a mature Christian to say no. There's still God's creation, or putting it in some sort of way that I've learned to try to do it, and that's, I guess, my struggle is that I think as we mature as Christians, we may not gossip per se, but we enjoy it and we listen to it.
Oh,
so,
Christians enjoy gossip.
Yeah.
The Grand Baptist Church is the good way to phrase that is it a Wednesday night prayer meeting or gossip session? Which is it? You really have to think about that sometimes. Because which really is it? Why are some of these things bringing up? And why in this format? Okay, so something's genuine. I'll go back to the illustration. The man was concerned about his mother-in-law. There was no gossip, no malicious intent, nothing like that. But how often are pray for so-and-so, pray for this couple, you know, they're really having very difficult marital problems. Okay, yeah, definitely, but why are you telling everybody? Do you see the difference? Why are you telling everybody that's personal? How about if they're personal friends, or share that on a more intimate level than a public broadcasting level? The whole church doesn't need to know.
We're not using names.
Okay.
Just praying for generic. A couple in trouble.
Yeah. You can use generic.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up lying, but I have an unspoken request.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, it's always like, okay, I'm not sure how to pray for that other than, Lord, you know what the request is. I don't know what it is. Glorify yourself in it. If there is, and you can do some, if, you know, then do this. If this, then do that. But glorify yourself, whatever this request is. And obviously my brother or my sister is troubled by this because they're pregnant. Comfort them in the midst of this. Give them wisdom as they try to advise. I can pray for that. I don't have to know the details. But so often we go, they're having marital problems. Oh, what's going on? Oh, how did you hear about it? Oh, so-and-so. Really? Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Yeah, I thought that's what was going on. You know, if I was married to her, I would probably be the same way. Or, well, I thought you had to put up with that guy. You know, I mean, now you're going to have your own marital problems. Okay, so you see the big difference in what's being revealed. The tongue is only expressing what's in the heart, and that's the problem. So what Proverbs keeps telling us is let's be careful with what we're allowing to get out of us and make sure we're putting a check on our heart to consider where we're really at with Christ. Are we really walking with Him as we should? Because a lot of stuff we start spewing out is like, yeah, you're not really as mature as you should be yet. We need to keep growing. Okay? And you can use that opportunity, like you're saying, Phil, with there is then, okay, if this is going on around me, how can God use me to be a blessing to people around them of not being nasty or anything else, but just letting them understand God has a different way. I don't have to get involved with that. For example, they're gossiping about someone, this is a terrible thing, so here's how to stop it immediately at work. That's a terrible thing that's going on. You know what? We need to pray for that person right now. Mm-hmm. You know what? Maybe you don't pray. I need to pray. Excuse me, Mom. Just be quiet for a minute. Let me pray. And pray out loud for the person. They are not going to tell you anything anymore. Okay? It works. You know, someone uses the Lord's name in vain. It's a prayer meeting. Great. What are we praying about? You can use these things. Maybe it's a little facetious on some of this, but you can use them to direct them back to where they need to be. And that's what God wants us to do. Is that easy to do? It's not. It's very intimidating. What if it's your boss doing it? You might be a little more hesitant. You still need to do it. And say, you know, you might just say, you know, I'm really sorry to hear that. You know what? I'm going to be praying about that. You know, you may not do it in front of him and says, you know what? In fact, I'm going to do it right now and go on to somebody else. You want to join me? You can invite. But we have to be those who want God to be glorified, and that has to control our hearts. And that's why this is so difficult. The whole area of communication is difficult because too often we're communicating actually what's there, and it's really nasty.
Mm-hmm.
It's spilling out. And so Proverbs have all these warnings to make sure we're not getting into that. Yes?
So we don't cut people off when that happens. I find myself separating myself, and I'd rather just sit in my room and not deal with people at all. Mm-hmm. So I like the way you kind of, you know, let's pray for that person, you know, instead of separating, I guess, you know, and kind of, that gets a little dark for me too.
If it's a work environment, I know my mom ended up, basically it was one or two people she'd have lunch with, because all the rest were in these gossip sessions.
Yeah.
Either you're going to end up by yourself one way or the other, either by choice of, like, I just can't handle it, or you're going to say something like what I just said, I don't want you around. And they don't. They're going to isolate you. But either way, you know, I think more for us is trying to keep our own mindset of how can I glorify God in this situation? Right at the moment, if that is my mindset, or the old, I mean, it got popular again, it was, you know, WWJD. What would Jesus do? Going back to a book from the mid-1800s, but what would Jesus do? If I keep that in my mind of what would Jesus do? All this is going on around me. How would he handle that? Then that's what I should do. I might be entitled. I want to hear it. Yeah, I want to know what the lowdown is on these people too. You know, and like, yeah, I always thought they were that way. No, I don't want to put it. I want to go there, but I know that's not where I should go. I would rather do it God's way. So then I have to start thinking before acting, before speaking, before getting involved with stuff. Now let me move slowly toward these things and think how to respond. Okay? That's the hard part. And that's why the tongue gets us so much trouble, because so quickly we are responding to what's around us and then it's spewing out. So wise man restrains his lips in order to think about it, to think, what is it that God really wants to do? What should I be doing? Not just giving in to the emotion of the moment or what the first thing that pops into your head. That's not a good idea. Okay? So there's gossip. Now, somewhat related to this, I guess, would be seduction. It's another wrong use of the tongue. And often Proverbs is used in the sexual sense of the seductress, the smooth tongue of the adulteress, Proverbs 6:24. And a lot of Proverbs warn about this kind of enticement. But it's using persuasive words, and they're designed to work on what this person actually would like. It feeds on the idea of this person's bent towards sin, our bent to gratify ourselves, and that's how seduction works. See, gossip could be part of that because it's also seductive. It's what we want to hear. It feeds an evil and a bent toward that. Proverbs 22:14 warns, the mouth of the adulteress is a deep pit. He was cursed, and the Lord will fall into it. But the seductress is, again, not the only one. That same kind of speech is used in a lot of other things. How about flattery? We could call that non-sexual seduction. Maybe that'd be a good way to describe it, to make it a little more serious. It's sweet, and it's artificial. Some might consider it polite lying, but lying is still sin, and once the motivations are examined, the evil is fully exposed. The English word flatter means to praise excessively, specifically, especially from motives of self-interest. And that matches well the Hebrew use in the Proverbs, halak, which originated as a reference to smoothing metal, but developed as an application to speech that was smooth and deceptive. Psalm 55:21 is used that way. Proverbs 29:5 exposed the motives in this warning. The man who flatters his neighbor is spreading a net for his steps. It's a trap. So flattery is used that way, to entrap prey. It's used because it works. And it works because people like to hear other people praise them, whether it is true or not. It doesn't have to be true. Flattery builds the ego, builds up pride, it blinds the hearer to the danger that's upon him. And it's a destructive force. Proverbs 26:28, a lying tongue hates those it crushes, and a flattering mouth works ruin. The lying tongue, the flatterer, had the same goal in mind. It's just that the flatterer is more pleasant to listen to than the liar, because he's boosting your ego. So be wary of those with smooth lips that flatter. Benjamin Franklin wisely said, the same man cannot be both friend and flatterer. Wow. First offense is having enough humility and an honest evaluation of yourself not to believe it. Treat it like chewing gum. Enjoy it briefly, but don't swallow it. Okay? At least that's what you're supposed to do with chewing gum. The godly prefer and practice themselves, Proverbs 28:23. He who rebukes a man will afterward find more favor than he who flatters with the tongue. And so the righteous seek to be true friends, as described in Proverbs 27:6. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. Be wary of those who flatter. It's around us, and it works. It works very well. Deception. More than just flattery, Proverbs gives many additional warnings about deceptions. Proverbs 26:24-25, he who hates disguises it with his lips. He lays upon deceit in his heart. When he speaks graciously, do not believe him. There are seven abominations in his heart. He's deceitful. Conceals the real heart, motives, with a pleasant communication. He's courteous, with kindness. Proverbs 12:20, deceit is in the heart of those who devise evil. So it doesn't have to spill into flattery to be affected. It's just necessary to hide the truth. So be careful those that are characterized by lying, deceitfulness. Proverbs 12:5, the thoughts of the righteous are just, but the counsel of the wicked are deceitful. It's another use of communication that's wrong. Many forms of deceit, common to marketing. Took a marketing class in college, one of the best classes I ever took. Man, you start seeing right in front of you. It has nothing to do with your product or anything. It's just about how can we sell you? And you start learning about yourself, about how easily you are sold on things. But it's deceitful. Is it really new, improved, bigger, stronger, more effective, better for you? Compared to what? New and improved. Compared to what? Bigger than what? Being a person who loves candy, and having watched candy bars change for 60 years now, they get bigger, they get smaller. They get bigger, they get smaller. They get thinner, they get fatter. Because now it's bigger, because, well, they're charging you a lot more. They only increase a little bit, but now they can charge you more. And then they have to keep shrinking it as to keep that price point. And then it's bigger, improved. Well, it's because they shrunk it all this time. You never see them advertise it smaller so we can keep the same price. That would be the truth, right? It's like, what happened to my candy bar? I thought it was... And you start looking. What happened to a half-gallon ice cream tub? I mean, really? What happened to it? Stewart's. Stewart's still has it, right? That's it. Everybody else. It went from a half-gallon to now it's going to be 1.75 liters. Now we're going to switch it down. It's 1.5 liters. Well, why are you using liters instead of quarts? Because I don't know what a liter is because I'm an American. That's why they use it. It's deception. So you don't even know what you're buying. Deceit. But how often is use honest for everything around us? To use words to give the impression it's something that it really isn't. And we need to be careful of that. Offers of pleasure, gifts, and advantages, they're just simply used to exploit us. A lot of proverbs on that. The devious are an abomination to the Lord, but he is intimate with the upright. Proverbs 3:32. Feelings actually mutual. Proverbs 14:2. He who walks in his uprightness fears the Lord, but he who is devious in his ways despises him. Devious don't want to have anything with God. Proverbs 14:8. The wisdom of the sensible is to understand his way, but the foolish of fools is deceit. And fools are easily fooled. So when offers of pleasure, gifts, or things are there, beware. Blessings are in the head of the righteous, the mouth of the wicked conceals violence. It's there, but you just don't see it. And he who speaks the truth then tells what is right, but a false witness is deceit. So we're careful. We put away deceit from our mouths, far from us. Proverbs 4:24. So be very careful, extremely careful about your sense of humor as well. Proverbs 26:19 compares a man who deceives his neighbor in a joke to a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death. They do this thing, well, was I not just joking? Well, your joke was actually very destructive. Be very cautious. Lying, of course, is very direct. It's evil. It's a root of gossip, seduction, flattery, deception, and we're all prone to it. Lying lips are an abomination of the Lord, but those who deal faithfully are his delight. Proverbs 12:22. Now, a lot of people think they're going to gain by lying, but it's an abomination to God. Just pure and simple. Short-term gain, long-term loss, because in the end it will bring destruction. Proverbs 19:9, a false witness will not go unpunished. He who tells lies will perish. Contrast with honesty in Proverbs 12:19. Truthful lips are established forever. The lying tongue is only for a moment. Lying is a revelation, really a personal character. Proverbs 14:5. A trustworthy witness will not lie, but a false witness utters lies. It's character. And our nation is sadly characterized by a lot of lying. And they don't think twice about it. Whatever. I just lied. A lot of people will lie so much they have no idea what the truth is. Before Diane became a Christian, and she'll tell you this herself, is like she lied so much she did not know what was true. She couldn't tell you what's true because she started believing her own lies. I think a lot of politicians believe their own lies. Because they seem very sincere in their statements, but it's like, how can you get there? You repeat the lie enough, you start believing. You don't know what truth is. Proverbs 17:4, an evildoer listens to wicked lips, a liar pays attention to a destructive tongue. how bad is that? Any election, how many people are fooled by the lying? Even if the better candidate wins, how many people are deceived? This should be of great concern. It's a nation that desires they hear what they want to hear. They like the lying. Perhaps even worse is this quote heard in the halls in a major international business in a complaint about a co-worker. Quote, he should be professional enough to know when he should tell the truth. He should be professional enough to know when he should tell the truth. I.e., professionalism means that once in a while he has to tell the truth. Otherwise, he should just lie. A lot of businesses are so known for the lying, it's just the whole, that whole business area is, can you trust a used car salesman? Well, hopefully you can find one that's trustworthy because you'd like to buy one. But just the whole profession is so known for it. When lying becomes part of the legal system, then justice is perverted. Proverbs 19:28, a rascally witness makes a mockery of justice, the mouth of the wicked spreads iniquity. 19:5, a false witness will not go unpunished, he who tells lies will not escape. It may escape in this life, but God is eventually going to punish them. And perversion of truth is really what underlies all these sins. Eve was deceived in the Garden of Eden and ate of the forbidden fruit. Adam then rejected the truth that he'd been given by God in favor of what his wife gave him, pursued wickedness for his own selfish desires, and thus rejecting God's revelation of truth, he is the one that we trace our sin to. Eve deceived, Adam sinned on purpose. He knew what he was doing. But the perversion is the heart that then flows out of what is communicated. The perversion of heart reject what God has said for what they want. Jesus said in Matthew 15:18-19 that it's what proceeds from the mouth that reveals the heart. And then he has this whole list of different sins. Evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, slanderers, all these things. Proverbs 11:28 states it this way, the perverse in heart are an abomination of the Lord, but the blameless will walk in his delight. It's the problem again is goes back to in our hearts. What's in there, what comes out, it's only a revelation of what's in there. And that's what the gospel of the Lord Jesus does. It changes us, so it cleanses our heart, so it starts changing within us. That's the power of the gospel. It changes wicked sinners who can't control their mouths, who just spew all sorts of garbage out, into saints who can have self-control to take the time to think through things before they act. Thinking through a lot of the proverbs about what is right, what is wrong, what should be done, what shouldn't be done. Controlling themselves. It's God that changes us so that it starts reflecting in what we say and how we do it. So he cleanses the heart from its perversity so we properly then start communicating what is right and cease from saying what is sinful. That's the beauty of a cleansed heart. And that's what gives us hope as Christians. I don't have a lot. There's no hope for non-Christians unless you can somehow get them to have speech that they think is still going to benefit them. I don't have to do this Christian. It's coming out of my heart because God has changed it. So wisdom can guard your mouth and soul and deliver you from those who are evil. That's how Proverbs puts it. He who guards his mouth and his tongue guards his soul from troubles, Proverbs 21:23 and 2:12, to deliver you from the way of evil, from the man who spreads perverse things. That's the purpose of Proverbs itself, so that we don't go that way. That is our goal. If you really want to know how to control your tongue, how to use it wisely for the blessing, memorize Proverbs. Go through it. It is full of so much stuff on giving us direction and good pithy statements on avoiding what is wrong and doing what is right. Okay? All right, let's take a break.